A number of years ago, there was a fascinating national survey conducted by a research group. The question that they asked participants was simply, what word or phrase do you most long to hear? Unsurprisingly, the top response was, I love you. The second was, I forgive you. And the third was, supper's ready. Apparently, the core of what we long for is love, reconciliation, and dinner. I know that that speaks to me and the pull that I feel toward kinship and shared meals, especially communion. In today's text, we get two important bread stories, the first of which comes from our favorite whiny, wandering bunch of Israelites in the wilderness. Hungry and quick to complain, Moses doesn't hear the end of his people's grumbling, and so God steps in and provides manna for them each day. With the second bread story, John positions us readers to ask the question, what does it mean for Jesus to be manna? And in my mind, it means that the story of manna isn't just a story of Israel's past, but it's a continuing gift to us in the present. And both of these stories help us to explore just what enough means. The Israelites experienced God's saving presence when they crossed the Red Sea, but they still failed to trust God to feed them in the desert wilderness. Faced with hunger, they immediately thought to turn back to Egypt. In a similar way, the just-fed crowd in the Gospel of John fails to understand the full extent of what Jesus has offered them. You see, in John's Gospel, several times Jesus says, I am something. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. And in today's text, I am the bread of life. As one scholar explains, the other gospel writers tell us about stories that Jesus told, stories with ordinary things like lost coins or small seeds or people on a journey. The author of John's gospel takes an entirely different approach. In John's gospel, Jesus identifies himself with those objects from human experience and religious symbols. For John, there are always layers of meaning. And one basic idea seems to be that both people's religious needs and human longings are met in the person of Jesus. Just before today's reading, we encounter the story of Jesus feeding a huge crowd of people with just 5 loaves and 2 fish. We all know how the story goes in that at the end, they had more than enough. Seemingly, today's crowd was present for that miraculous meal, or at least have heard about it because they've crossed the lake in boats looking for him. Along with another preacher, I can't help but wonder about this crowd, who they were. Who exactly was Jesus serving? What kinds of people made up the 5,000 that were fed that afternoon? How many, for instance, were single or married or divorced? How many had children with them or were estranged from their own parents? How many were foreigners looking to make a new life in a new place, looking to be accepted? How many were getting sidelong glances by others in the crowd because they were of a different ethnicity or living with an incurable illness or living some frowned upon lifestyle? How many of them were pre-approved to receive the bread because they had recited the proper statement of faith beforehand? Of course, we don't get told any of those things, mostly because it doesn't matter. And Jesus doesn't care about any of that. He simply breaks the bread and passes it out. He says, take and eat. Wherever you're from, whoever you are, whatever you've been through, you are enough. In all likelihood, it was a crowd of poor people, people who were too often going hungry. Jesus knows that they need food, but he also seems to say that food is not enough. You might know the name of Abraham Maslow. He was an American psychologist best known for what we call his hierarchy of needs. His pyramid of human needs was an essential component for us teachers to learn when I was in college and preparing to lead in a classroom. The sort of central theme being, how can you expect students to grow if their foundational needs aren't being met at home? Maslow's pyramid categorizes human needs at various levels, the general premise being that people's lower level basic needs have to be met before they can move up to higher levels. So for example, food, water, shelter, and safety, those are essential and prerequisites for meeting one's next level needs of relationship and love. And all of those are precursors for fulfillment at the very top of the pyramid, which is spirituality and transcendence. The idea being that the pyramid can't be climbed without sufficient provision at each level. The levels build on one another. There is no shortcut. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Or at least so Maslow believed. Because Jesus seems to think otherwise. Jesus seems to think that even physically hungry people are also hungry for God. Because when some from this same crowd follow him a few days later, they say, "Do it again. Provide food for us. Show us another sign," like when Moses provided manna to the Israelites. And Jesus responds by basically saying, "It's not just about food, you know." Jesus says that bread, physical bread, isn't enough. He says, in essence, "You came back so that I would feed you again, but you need more than bread." In the words of that great lyrical theologian, Bruce Springsteen, "Everybody's got a hungry heart." Does God care if people's stomachs are full? Does God care if our bodies are nourished here and now? Yes, of course God does. I think that's why Jesus feeds the 5,000 before he lays down this more challenging wisdom, that even with an abundance of physical things, we'll still be hungry. We'll still be hungry for real sustenance, for faith that nourishes even through the absolute darkest parts of the night. During the bombing raids of World War II, thousands of children were orphaned and left to starve. The fortunate ones were rescued and placed in refugee camps where they received food and good care. Even once safe, many of those children who'd lost so much couldn't sleep at night. They feared waking up to find themselves homeless and without food once again. Nothing seemed to reassure them. Until finally, someone hit upon the idea of giving each child a piece of bread to hold at bedtime. Holding their bread, the children would finally sleep in peace. All through the night, that piece of bread reminded them, "Today I ate, and I will eat again tomorrow." There was enough. That story and powerful image comes from a little book packed full of wisdom called Sleeping with Bread, Holding What Gives You Life. For me, it captures the essence of how a daily bread faith can enable us to be at peace in the midst of life's sometimes overwhelming uncertainty and our deep fears. A few years ago, I was stopped in my tracks and a little punched in the gut by this nugget of truth from Richard Rohr, and I haven't stopped thinking about it since. He writes, "The opposite of faith is not doubt. The opposite of faith is control." In so many ways, we resist letting go in faith, insisting instead on our anxiety-filled, "we don't have enough" way. We're focusing on the world's shiny "more is enough" way. And when we get fixated on the lists of things that we think will make us happy or keep us safe or meet our needs or satisfy our hunger or quench our thirst, we miss God's daily abundance. Too often we are like the Israelites who see the manna that God has provided but can't identify what it is. We're really holding the bread that we need for this day, but we're too focused on what we used to have yesterday or what we think we need for tomorrow or a year from now or 10 years from now that we fail to see that today there is enough. Today, God is enough. Dear ones, I know that so many of you who saw this congregation through its most turbulent years often feel the tug of grief and longing about what used to be, or you feel the pang of anxious uncertainty about what will be in the future. But may we be reminded that God's response to our deep hunger is in daily provision. Today, there is enough for today. To be filled, we simply eat and give thanks, trusting that tomorrow there will be enough for tomorrow. And so then we can share freely what was not even ours to begin with. It is a letting go of control and a leaning into trust in God's faithfulness and provision. It's a shift in perspective from not enough and scarcity to more than enough and abundance. This there is enough daily bread faith calls us to the spiritual practices of attention and gratitude. As one preacher describes it, when we are paying attention to God's abundance, we can clearly see that in the wilderness places of our lives, God feeds us with the manna of healing and hope. And in the lonely places, God provides us with the rich meats of compassion and community. In the midst of struggles, God sets forth a banquet of meaning and dignity. Even in the presence of enemies, God sets a table of reconciliation and peace. This is the bread that endures. These are the things that can satisfy our hunger. Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." As we seek to grow in gratitude and change our perspective, I invite you into a daily practice to spend time at the end of each day reflecting on the bread of life that God has provided for that day. For what moment in the day are you most grateful? When did you give and receive the most love today? When did you feel the most alive today? When today did you have the greatest sense of belonging to yourself and others and God? When were you the most joyful today? Because when we are consistently attentive to our daily bread with gratitude, then we can let go. We can let go of control and trust the faithful, loving care of God's enoughness. You are enough. There is enough. God is enough. Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." May we believe it. And may we live it this day and each day. Amen.